Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 76 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. This month, we're talking about bad B2B content, where it comes from, and what we can do to make things better, with input from the head of writing at Velocity Partners, Harry Kapoor. My name's David Maguire, and I'm creative director at Radix Communications. Opposite me is our founder and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. As we were just saying, we're still drowning in work, so clearly there's still a need out there for content writers and copywriters.
Yes.
Which is great.
Absolutely.
We haven't been replaced by AI since our last episode.
No, although I'm beginning to think it would be a good
idea.
It would
be nice, yeah.
Anyway, later on this episode, we'll have details of how you, the listener, can have your say on the most important obstacles that get in the way of great B2B content and what we can all do about it. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas in the meantime, do let us know. You can email us at podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. This October, I'll once again have the privilege of hosting the UK's National Copywriting Conference and the pleasure of introducing my friend Harry Kapoor, who's the head of writing at Velocity Partners. Harry's talking about the idea of skin in the game and how it can help to make our B2B content more authentic. So I started by asking him where he got that idea.
It's just a really interesting topic to me. It sort of captivated me for like all of last year. It's kind of the biggest thing I was thinking about. It kind of goes back to like a long time ago. I've always had this feeling that agency marketers are a massive disadvantage to in-house marketers. And I could never quite tell why. I mean, obviously, I work in an agency, always been an agency rat. I spent 1 year in-house and didn't do particularly good marketing when I was there. All evidence was suggesting that this hypothesis of mine was bogus. Until last year, I started reading the book Skin in the Game by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And it's, his books are always quite hard to read, but the ideas in them are always sort of eternal and timeless. And this thing in Skin in the Game, it really clarified to me why this job is so hard, why it's always a struggle, why, like, before we started recording this, we were talking about how crazy it is and how it's always crazy. That's kind of what I decided to talk to the copywriters about at CopyCon.
Okay, and this is Thala from Nudge, right?
No, that's Richard Thala. This is Nicholas Taleb. He wrote Black Swan, Anti-Fragile. He called the 2008 recession before other people did, and he's collecting. He's got a series called Incerto, where he's collecting a bunch of books that he's writing, which I'm certain we're going to still be talking about and thinking about, 100, 200 years from now. They're just fantastic pieces. But he's quite, he's a spiky dude. He gets into a lot of fights. And so I can imagine this wouldn't be something that a bunch of marketers would read, because he spends a lot of time telling marketers they're idiots. And so I thought, well, I'm a marketer. Maybe if I'm telling marketers they're idiots, it'll go down better or something.
And so what's the basic idea of Skin in the Game? What are you going to be telling the copywriters about?
Right. So the central idea is the notion of skin in the game. I'm sure it's an expression that everyone's heard, is that if I'm telling someone to take a risk, then I have to have taken that risk myself. So there are some ancient Babylonian examples of this where, if you build a house and then that house crumbles with the owner in it, then the person who built that house has to be killed as well. And so that's a really extreme version of it. But what I find super interesting is that today, because of the internet, anyone who's on the internet has had to kind of rewire the way they trust experts that they come across online. And, folks like you and me can sort of start to build a name for ourselves in a way that we couldn't have done before. And so it's become an even more important principle to be able to say, okay, there's no one publication that's telling me what good advice is, what bad advice is. And, you know, I'm basically on the wild of this thing where I'm just seeing millions and millions of people talking to me. Who do I actually trust? And skin in the game turns out to be a really, really good principle for finding people whose advice you should be paying attention to. And as a marketer, and as a marketer in an agency that kind of got big for content marketing before we got into wider marketing, it's a super important idea, because we're basically trying to, as an outsider, a perpetual outsider, I'm trying to make my clients more credible to the people they're trying to talk to. And it's just crazy to me that companies would hire people with even less skin in the game than their marketing team to go and sort of solve this massive, massive problem. And so I just feel like, as a writer, that puts a lot of pressure on you. And I think what it should do is it should change some of the tactics we use. But very often I don't see those tactics changing.
So for a B2B marketer or a B2B copywriter who's listening, apart from just saying, well, we have a natural disadvantage if we're not in-house, what can we do to overcome that?
Right. So a number of different things. I think this isn't a silver bullet sort of problem. It's more like a thousand lead bullets problem. And so a silver bullet answer to this might be, hey, well, you don't pay me as an agency unless you get a specific set of results. And I'd love to go out and tell everyone, hey, that's how you should do it. And I'd love to tell Velocity, hey, that's how we should do it. But we're still at such a nascent place in terms of measuring marketing and trying to figure out what this stuff is. I mean, anyone who's ever asked their client, hey, what are your goals, knows that that's a really hard thing to live up to. And so sure. I don't think it's a silver bullet thing. On the thousand lead bullets front, I think there's a bunch of tactics, a couple of them that spring to mind. One is a thing I tell my writers not to do here is, like, very often when people do research, they're researching to collect facts. Like they're collecting, 12% of people did X, and where did I get that data from? Can I trust it? Is it, recent, and that kind of thing. And that's by and large what they're trying to do with research. The thing I find way more interesting and way more useful is to research for opinions. If we're getting into, just picking a category like data management, and I feel like I don't know anything about it, really the most useful thing for me is a phone call with a customer or a blog from someone with actual skin in the game, just complaining about their job or just complaining about the category. Like, that is so much more useful to me than 12% of people use this system and not that system. Because you don't just find out how people think about stuff, you find out how they feel about stuff. And when you can see how people who do have skin in the game feel about something, you can really infer what the wider philosophy or principles are behind their decision making. And so that's the kind of thing that I think we need to do way more of, even though it takes us into these weird, squishy, abstract places. I do think that's the essential stuff for writers.
Absolutely. Kind of that sort of emotional intelligence, that sort of emotional, yes. Intelligence in the, in the sense of spying. Although I guess kind of you have to get a cross section of that, right? Because I guess the thing that you risk doing is finding one person ranting in a really brilliant way and kind of fall in love with that rant and feel that maybe that's representative of everyone.
Correct,
so correct. I guess you've kind of got to make sure that you've got a bit of qualitative and a bit of quantitative there.
That's exactly it. It's definitely a balanced thing. This is, but by no means do I think we need to stop collecting the numbers or stop doing the quantitative stuff. I just don't think we can assume that the quantitative stuff is telling us everything we hope it's going to tell us. A really big thing for me in all of this is I've always sort of had this chip on my shoulder as a marketer, feeling there are moments where I feel like, oh man, am I the only one who's worried about being intellectually honest about this thing, which is very much a writer's insecurity, right? And
Yes, the listener will be nodding, I'm sure, going, I thought it was just me.
Yeah, and it's the funniest thing, because it's like, well, it's just marketing, you know, just make it sound good, just put lipstick on that pig. And I think very often you get that kind of approach to it. And the intellectually honest thing to do very often is, I so often find ourselves find Velocity in a situation where we're actually telling our clients that their product isn't quite as good as they think it is. And it's sort of like, no, that's the product. Can you please go sell it and tell people that it's a nice thing? And we're like, yeah, but those guys have skin in the game. They're going to see right through these lies or these, you know, manipulations and that kind of thing. And so a really big piece of this is just having the intellectual honesty and rigor to say, look, what I've just written myself isn't actually gonna cut it out in this space, because I don't know enough, I don't know this market enough, I don't know this person enough. And so a lot of it is just, you know, treating this job as if it is one of the hardest jobs going, even though at the end of the day, it's just goddamn marketing.
Yeah, and it's a tricky thing, isn't it, to balance it when there are deadlines and stakeholders and all these things, to really hold that line and hold yourself to that standard. But I think that the outcome in the work and the emotional resonance, hopefully, of the marketing that we all want to write, yeah, is, you know, is hopefully worth it.
Yeah, yeah. And look, at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, I think copywriters usually have this, there's a cloud hanging over their head about, people tend to assume that if a copywriter's working on something, it's because they like literature, or they just like, you know, rhythm in a sentence and like that kind of stuff, and all these sort of meta esoteric things. And I think the reality for most of us who are writing and in marketing is like, we want to move product, right? Like, I don't want to do something that is ineffective. I don't want to waste my reader's time. I don't want to waste my client's time. I don't want to waste their money. And so at the end of the day, all this stuff boils down to, will people who read this actually believe that we are experts in this subject? Will people who read this actually get some true value out of this thing? Will people who read this actually be glad that they read this thing, right? Like, will it actually end up being an overall good thing that they came across this thing that you've done? And if that's the way you're thinking about writing and marketing, then skin in the game, to me, is one of the most important principles, and it you know, we cannot ignore it. It's sort of feels like something I gotta shout from the rooftops a little bit, but yeah,
sure. And I think with on the idea of how much investment we or do or don't have as writers and marketers, you know, what I was talking in a previous podcast episode to Maureen Blanford,
right,
and she was, you know, saying about how easy it is for those of us who give advice to people that say to a marketer, just be braver.
Yes.
You know, yeah. just go and be braver.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, that's really easy for you. There's nothing at stake for you.
There's nothing at stake for you. And also, like, I mean, when something is actually at stake for you, you go, oh yeah, there's kind of no real difference between being brave and stupid, right? Like, they both feel like you're doing the exact same thing. And this is why I'm such a big fan of Maureen. And the sort of, you know, she's so good at pointing out the bullshit that especially MarTech vendors proliferate sometimes. And I think that's, you know, that's one of my favorite examples of what a lack of skin in the game does to marketing, where, you know, you effectively start browbeating the people you're trying to sell to. And I said, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you focus on just generating value? And I think so often it comes down to a fundamental asymmetry between what the company is trying to accomplish and what their customers are trying to accomplish. You know, you get loads of organizations. I mean, I'm a, you know, we're B2B guys, so like all my references are all of the B2B ones. But, you know, you get organizations where actually the software isn't the thing that they're trying to sell. What they're trying to sell you is the professional services on the side. And so it's actually quite useful if the software is a piece of crap, because then the services guys look really good. And as the person who's doing the marketing for that, it's a really hard thing to get right, because you're like, oh my God, I'm really trying hard to give this person good advice, but actually I can't give them too much good advice because I need to save some of it for the professional services guys. And so you get these horrible asymmetries in certain markets, which just lead to ineffective marketing at the end of the day. So it's a tricky, convoluted sort of an issue, but it becomes so much more straightforward when you do have these symmetries between, actually, the more my customers win, the more we win as an organization. When a business is set up in that way, and there's a few, I think, of, you know, venture capital, by and large, I think is set up with that kind of symmetry. Stripe is another company I think about a lot, payments processing company, that's set up that way. When you look at the kind of marketing that these guys do, you just go like, oh, wow, that's, you know, it's so good, and they've invested so much and all their stuff. They have such good production values and everything. But then you try to drill into like how they pull this off, and it really just comes down to skin in the game. The more I look at this thing,
wow! Well, I cannot wait to hear about that in October. If the listener wants to go, tough. If you don't already have a ticket for the copywriting conference, it sold out weeks ago. Where were you? I think we've moved to the Barbican this year. We've doubled the capacity, and still it's sold out way, way, way in advance. So if somebody wanted to catch up with this idea from you, Harry, mm-hmm. and they can't get to the conference, what's the best thing? Have you written a blog about this, or have you got one in the works?
I haven't even written the talk yet. Jesus. I mean, I'm a marketer for a living. If I wasn't doing it at the last minute, it wouldn't count. A couple of things. I think I haven't written a blog about it just yet, just because I feel like I'm still trying to formulate my ideas. And also, I don't want to give away the goods before I've like done it on stage. But I will be, after the talk, I'll probably be taking that deck and turning it into something, and putting it up online. I'm not going to promise when I'm going to do that. So that'll be one way to find it. I'm also going to be speaking in Copenhagen. I think September 27th. God, I'm so bad at this. I think it's September 27th that I'll be talking around there. And so that's something that the, people could come and, check me, talk about that.
By the time this is this goes out online, that'll be like tomorrow.
Right? Exactly.
So just pop to Copenhagen.
Yeah, pop to Copenhagen. But I will be publishing something about this, and you know, God forbid, maybe I'll do some more talks. Let's see.
Great. Well, we'll pop a link to your Twitter in the show notes, sure. Perhaps. But Harry Kapoor, thank you so much for your time. That's been a blast.
Thank you. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Fiona, what do you make of the idea of skin in the game? Is there a danger that we could be too far removed from the people we're writing for?
Yes.
Okay.
In short, yeah, no, I thoroughly agree with Harry. And what I always like about Harry, whether he's speaking or whether he's writing blogs, he's always standing up for the reader. And he's always reminding us as writers that there is a reader there, and we have to write things that are interesting and relevant to them. Very often we are very far removed from that person. Even when, you know, we as copywriters are working directly with our direct clients, there's still a kind of remove, because we're working with their marketing person, and the marketing person, as we've often discussed, doesn't have that contact with the end customer a lot of the time. But sometimes, you know, when we're writing for an agency client, there's like two steps removed. And so, you know, the odds of producing something that is really relevant to the end reader are really quite slim.
And yet somehow we seem to manage it. Or would you include us in the people that are writing content that we'd like to do better?
I'd like to think that we try to manage it. But I think, you know, that there's often things standing in our way. So very often there isn't time to get to know in depth who this person is that we're writing for. You know, who is this reader? You know, you can do certain sort of persona exercises, but you're only, I think you mentioned it on the interview with Harry, actually, you might just get sort of one kind of idea of a person, of that person, and, you know, other people, other HR directors might not be like the one that you've landed upon as your persona. And so it is really difficult, especially when you're tight on time, to produce something that really, really not just speaks to the issues or aspirations that they have, but gives them something of value that they can't get elsewhere.
And I think that's where time kind of comes in two ways as a potential obstacle to good content. I think, you know, initially people think, well, I haven't got time to do anything special or anything out of the ordinary. But similarly, when people set a really tight schedule, and, you know, and similarly, we want to be very careful that we don't want to harangue marketers at all.
No,
here.
Absolutely.
You know, it's something that, you know, there are reasons why this stuff happens. Often the schedules are set by other people. But if the just the scheduling, the deadline and the turnarounds are too tight, then you can get into a mindset of we've just got to get this done rather than making it as good as it could be.
Yeah, so, you know, and there is a line because, you know, you could say, I'm going to make this as good as it can be, and then you can spend the next 5 years researching it and getting it exactly right. So you do have to draw a line. And, you know, we talk about this a lot in the agency, the line between sort of quality and efficiency, and there has to be a kind of balance between the two.
Sure.
But yes, often we're writing under deadlines that don't give us the chance to make the best possible content if we had the luxury of the time that we could spend on it.
Sure. And sometimes it's just, even if you're not working on something, having some time to just kind of ruminate on it or something almost while you're doing something else. You know, often I think that the, if you like, kind of the opportunity cost of a good idea is the great idea that you didn't have.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, time to think is a luxury,
yes.
Which we don't always have. It's something that I think about a lot, and I have sort of found certain ways around it. So, for example, I came upon a couple of podcasts, one for HR people and one for procurement people, in which they interview various kind of senior level HR and procurement people. So quite often I'll listen to something like that on my morning walk so that I'm in the mindset of the kind of reader of the piece of content. So that's just, I guess, an extra investment in time that I would have put in just to make sure that what we're creating is valuable to those people, also that it's using the language that they use. And so that kind of thing, because, you know, with podcasts, you can multitask. So you can be doing something else while you're listening to a podcast. So that can be really helpful.
What? You mean people aren't all stopping what they're doing and just listening
just to
this right now?
They're standing in the street, yes.
They're standing stock still and listening to what we have to say. The thing with the listening to a podcast or something like that, though, that's something that's like your time investment, almost kind of outside of the job. It's not as if a client would expect you to do that necessarily, or, you know, be happy to pay for you to do that. Or is that where the multitasking comes in?
Yeah, well, I mean, this depends on, you know, how you kind of organise your commercial model as a writer or an agency. But yeah, that's certainly not time that our clients are paying for. That's an investment in time that we're making in order to make the piece of content as good as it can be.
I guess it's one of those things where the more you write in a sector, or the more you write for a certain type of audience, that you probably get a better sense of who that person is. Or the more experience you have, you know, you can call upon in your mind people that you've met and sort of write for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Over time, you can definitely build up that experience. If you're, you know, continuously writing for the same kind of audience, if you're sort of going to events that are aimed at that audience, if you're listening to podcasts, if you're sort of in LinkedIn or other discussion groups that have got those kind of people in, then you become very familiar with that audience. And I think you can write very valuable original content for them. It's, you know, I think we probably find this when we start writing, perhaps for a new client or for a new audience, there isn't always the luxury of really getting to know that audience. And that's where, if you've got a shortcut in, if you've got somebody that you can go to who forms part of that audience and you can talk to them, that can be really useful. But sometimes they can tell you things you don't want to hear. So the other day, so for example, I'm doing some work at the moment for a client and their target audience is rebate accountants. Right. So it's quite a niche audience. And they happened to have taken on a new CFO who was one of these rebate accountants in the types of audience that they're in, the types of organization that they're trying to market to. And, you know, I'd spent a long time really lovingly creating this like big guide for this audience about, you know, everything that you need to know about sort of maximizing the rebates due to you and all of this. And he had a look at it and he said, nobody's going to read all this. Just send them a one-pager about the product. And I thought, God, is everything that we're doing like to no avail? And then that, because there's been some studies, and I think we've referred to this on the podcast before, that buying decisions are taking longer because there's all this content out there to get through. So even if sometimes the content is really valuable and really useful information, it can still delay the buying decision. So, you know, I mean, I was saying to you before we came on air that I was having a bit of a crisis of faith in our whole kind of remit of creating valuable content if you get feedback like that from the kind of person that you're creating the content for.
Sure. Yeah. And it's not, the funny thing is, it's not the only conversation that we've had this week of that kind.
Right. Yeah.
Where people going, stop trying to give me interesting content. Just give me the product information.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there are different sort of types of people and different types of buyer, I think. I guess that content marketing is where it's been so big. Everyone's kind of thought, well, this is the way that everybody buys now.
Yeah.
And it's probably still the way that some people buy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people. But the idea that, you know, that everybody wants to do all this research is maybe not true. It's probably, again, it's one of these things where it's probably not dead and it's probably not everything.
No, absolutely. And, you know, one person's opinion isn't, you know, representative of the entire market or the entire target audience in every single industry or organisation that you're targeting. But it does make you kind of think. And, you know, other things are, like, because a lot of the content we're creating is gated, you know, I've got into the habit of thinking, oh, well, it must be, I'm going to have to create something really weighty, you know, to justify the value exchange of, you know, them putting in their contact details to get this thing back. Now I'm starting to think, well, I don't really need to write a 5,000-word guide every time if that's overkill, if that's too much, you know. So, you know, so some interesting thoughts going on in my head at the moment, I think.
I think it might be something where, you know, with that, you can have the big in-depth stuff, but as long as it's kind of scannable as well. So if you want the quick takeaways, you can have them. And if you want the in-depth stuff,
I think
you
that's,
can have it, I suppose.
I think that's definitely it. So it's got to be, yeah, very scannable, navigable, as you say, so people can go to the bits that interest them. I also think there's a certain amount of truth in the whole medium is the message type thing, because if a prospect sees that you've put a lot of time and effort into creating, you know, this guide or whatever it is that's targeted at them, they'll come away with the perception that you are an expert, that you know what you're talking about, even if they're not going to read absolutely every page from cover to cover.
I go, yes. Yeah. It's what they, in paper, what they used to call thud marketing.
Thud marketing. There you go. I never heard that before.
Yeah,
that's
the thud that the document makes when it hits your desk.
Yeah, but what would you say for a PDF?
I don't know. We may well be talking about PDFs next month.
Okay.
So we've gone down the rabbit hole a little bit, but talking about obstacles to good content, insofar as it is possible to create content that people want to read, what other things do you think stop marketers creating the work that they really want to create?
Definitely budget. Mm-hmm. So because I think if you're going to create a really good piece of content, you have to invest in all of the areas around that. So it's the research, it's the writing, it's the design, it's the, you know, how you distribute it and how you promote it. And there's often not budget allocated to really kind of invest in all of those things.
Yeah. And I guess for us, how we can help clients there, I suppose the best thing we can do is probably just to be honest about what's involved. And if you put in this, you get that out. If you put in this, you get that out. I remember we had a conversation recently with a client who wanted various things. And we said, well, if we do it this way and spend this much more time on it, you'll get a better result. And what she did was, you know, that didn't fit within her budget. So she looked where she could prioritize and create fewer things, but better things.
Yeah, fewer better pieces. Yeah, is often the way to go. Yeah, yeah.
Which hopefully, you know, that's where you can kind of hopefully find wiggle room within the budget. But that's so difficult if you've already committed to a program of content.
Absolutely, yes. But you often find people saying, oh, you know, we want to produce a blog a week, you know, without really thinking about, you know, what are these blogs going to be, you know, and how are we going to show our expertise through these blogs? Mm. So that, I think that is quite a good discussion to have. It's like, do you really want to produce a blog a week, or do you want to produce one blog a month that's of real value to your audience?
Absolutely. Even if it's longer, more expensive, yeah. But it's just a really standout piece. One of the things that I hear a lot is to do with stakeholder interference, you know, and Doug from Velocity did a whole speech on it at B2B Ignite recently about, you know, how managing your stakeholders is not a thing in between you and the job. It mm-hmm. is the job. Yeah. And the idea that so many good ideas don't happen just because the marketers don't even try now because they know it won't get through.
Yeah, I have to say that's not been my experience that I can think of. Where we're working directly with clients and we're working with their marketing team, I can't think of any instance where we've had ideas that the marketer hasn't wanted to take forward and mm-hmm. get stakeholder approval on. So that probably does happen, but we haven't seen it. And I have to say that sometimes the stakeholder interference, as you might call it, can be really useful, just like this case that I've had this week when one of the stakeholders had been in the position of the target reader and had really good, valuable input.
Sure. I think sometimes there's a perception that stakeholders are more stick in the mud than they are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, some areas like using clear and simple language, you know, I think stakeholders have a sense that, well, you're dumbing down my subject and things. And you know, you kind of get that feedback quite a lot where people will make the text more complicated almost for the sake of making it complicated. But as far as kind of creating nice kind of, you know, ideas and stuff that's different, I, you know, I've had some success about sort of explaining that. You know, we did a working on an ebook at the moment for a client in the IT sector, and they're and we were able to show them that the idea they had come up with was really similar to like a million ebooks that are out in the world already, and actually put it back to them and went, well, okay, how do you want to make this different?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because you do hear that quite often, you know. You know, these people haven't had time to kind of analyze everything that's out there on the market, and so maybe aren't aware that there's a lot of very similar stuff out there. And so if you can sort of guide them to a more specific subtopic within that area, then that content's going to perform better for them.
Yeah, and the content, the subtopic, the style, yeah. The audience, all of these things, you know, and then you can kind of show them objectively and go, well, here's an ebook from a big competitor. We noticed that the Flesh Kincaid score for this means that you ought to be postgraduate level before you're reading this ebook.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's going to take, you know, it's very difficult to read. So you can start to say, well, would it be better for your audience if you were to say something, you know, more straightforward, they could digest more quickly?
Yeah. So finding ways to differentiate from competitor content that isn't just in the actual content of the content. Yes. Yeah, it can be really helpful.
Well, I think it's a subject we can certainly come back to, you know, and talk to people in more detail about what it is that gets in the way, because there are so many great marketers, so many good companies, so many people want to do such good work that it's really odd that there's so much really stinky B2B content in the world. And I'd love to know where it comes from. Because presumably behind some of it, there's a marketer who's frustrated, who's being prevented from doing what they want to do. So, listener, this is where you come in. We'd really like you to get involved in this conversation. We've prepared a really quick anonymous survey. It's like 5 minutes long. And it's about what stops you doing your best work and what we can do to help. It takes less than 5 minutes, and you can find it on our website, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes. Please just take a few minutes, just fill it in, share it with B2B marketers in your own network, because the more answers we get, the more accurate the results are. And then we'll find out what the answers are and how we can solve this problem of the rising tide of stinky B2B content. And we'll share those results with you in a future episode.
I think that'd be really interesting to see. I'm really looking forward to that.
And I'm sorry, but believe it or not, we are out of time. In fact, we are way over time. And if you're listening to this, you're late to whatever it was you were going to. I'm sorry. If you have any comments or thoughts on this episode, please do fill in the survey. You can find the address in the show notes. Or you can also email us at podcast@radix-communications.com. Or you can send us a voice memo, which is our special favorite. Or you can find us on Twitter at radixcom. You can find more of our gubbins and sign up for monthly copywriting tips at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, remember, you're the best around and nothing's going to ever keep you down. Goodbye.